In association with iFanboy, welcome again to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today is a combination of a Word Balloon University and more of our San Diego Comic-Con coverage because it's a presentation of the 5th annual podcasting panel at San Diego. I was pleased to be part of the inaugural cast back in 2006 and very happy to be back in 2010. Along with me on the panel are Josh Flanagan from iFanboy, Jimmy Aquino from Comic News Insider, Brian Pants Crispin from Comic Geek Speak, Bob Breedall of the Comic Book Page, and Cameron Hathaway of Cammy's Comic Corner. It was a lively conversation. We talked about some of the more significant news stories of the last 5 years, who are the creators that impressed us within the last 5 years, our role as journalists, critics, and pundits, and we field questions from the live audience. This episode of Word Balloon is brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide selection of trade paperbacks, hardbacks, absolute editions, omnibus editions, essentials, showcases, all at reasonable prices of 35% or more off the standard retail price. Don't forget, if your order is $50 or more at InStockTrades.com, your shipping comes free. InStockTrades.com is a proud sponsor of the podcasting community. Many of the shows included in today's panel are sponsored by InStockTrades, and I thank them for their patronage. And they thank you for your patronage to their website. I know for a fact that a lot of our listeners shop at InStockTrades.com and their sister site, Discount Comic Book Service, DCBService.com. If you've never tried them out, do yourself a favor. You'll be surprised at the selection and the savings. Go to InStockTrades.com. There was one person in attendance who asked a question. It was unclear in terms of when they were speaking. The mics just didn't pick them up properly, so I will interject when that question pops up. Otherwise, a very clean panel here at San Diego. It was on Thursday at 5:30 in the afternoon. Let's take you back to last week's comic book podcasting panel from the San Diego Comic-Con on this episode of Word Balloon. Well, folks, thank you very much for coming to the 5th annual podcasting panel at San Diego. We're very thrilled because some of us were here on that first panel 5 years ago. And happy to be back. I'm John Suntress. I host a podcast called Word Balloon. And I will let the other gentlemen introduce themselves, starting with the man to my left.
I am Josh Flanagan of iFanboy.com, and I would like everyone to be aware that in the back of this it says some of your audience may be under 18 years of age. That's probably just for me.
No, we got one back there.
So I'll try not to. Yeah,
we'll be
now
clean.
I feel bad.
I'm Brian Crispin from Comic Geek Speak.
The voice of authority there. I'm Bob Breedall. I'm the co-host with John Mayo of the Comic Book Page podcast.
I'm Cameron Cammy Hathaway of Cammy's Comic Corner video and now audio podcast.
Excellent. And, you know, we all talk all the time to you guys via iTunes and our websites and other various ways of getting podcasts. Does everyone listen to one of the podcasts represented here? Fantastic. Show of hands of anyone who hasn't listened to the podcast but decided to show up anyway. One guy. Two people. Mr. Phil's busting our asses. Mr. Phil, by the way, is here in the audience. One of the fine guys who was part of, or I don't remember, was it Charlito on the original panel?
I remember who was on the first.
But Charlito was.
Indie Spinner Rack, a wonderful podcast as well. And I'll see if he's here. He's going to be fashionably late, probably. Our own Jimmy Aquino from Comic News Insider may or may not show up for our panel. But if not, there's certainly enough of us to continue to talk. But interesting things have happened in the last 5 years as far as what's been going on in comics. And I'm sure all of us are very proud to have done our little part in terms of spreading the word. What is the most interesting thing that happened, I'd say, in the last 5 years? Josh?
I wasn't prepared for that.
Essay question.
What's the most interesting? I mean, the most interesting that's happening right now is digital.
Okay. Do you think within the last 5 years that is the most interesting thing that's happened?
I think that if you're talking about a massive change.
Game changer?
Game changer wide across the board, how things are delivered, how comics are being consumed. I think that that's going to be a thing. Obviously, right now we're in that strife portion where everybody's fighting against it or for it or trying to do something one way or another. But I think that the model as it exists with the direct market and people who go and buy comic books has reached its apex. I think that, you know, books going into bookstores is a very good thing and all, but issues, monthly issues, this is it. There's not that many new fans. They're not being replenished. Everybody is aging. And, you know, in order to find... I know, it's scary.
Well, some of us on this very panel, as we're speaking, are aging. Go on.
It's true.
Ow. Green bananas. We don't buy them anymore.
I think that... I mean, that's the thing that I, for the last year or two, that I think has really been focusing on is a thing that's, you know, how it's being consumed. You know, everybody's like, the iPad. But the iPad's only one little part of the whole thing. That's my answer right now.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, it's Mr. Vegas himself. He's 5 minutes late. Give me a Keto!
Woo! All right.
And I'm guessing he paid $5 to everyone who just applauded for Jimmy. I think that's very nice.
I got 10.
First, before we go to the rest of the panel, in the audience, people consuming comics digitally, iPhones, iPads, show of hands, smattering, almost the whole
room. That's a large portion.
There you go. An iPad right there in the front row. Fantastic.
That's a massive
piece. What do you think of the digital world?
I'm still stuck in the past. I'm all about having the issue in my hand, although I do understand the need for digital comics. I'm out there. It's just I'm very slow to adapt to that. I don't have an iPad. That doesn't get me right.
You don't have to, but it's about having the option. You're saying it correctly. There are a lot of people who respond to it in such a way that they hear digital comics and they get defensive. Oh, I don't want to lose my... I'm not talking about that. We're talking about you want to grow everything. You want it to exist, you know.
It's another platform.
The instant gratification that we've all gotten so used to with everything else, you know.
Bobby?
I think that's exactly it, Josh. I mean, I'm like pants. I don't personally have any desire to read the digital comics, but I see that as a great way of reaching a new audience that you're not going to get into a comic shop necessarily to pick up an issue, but they might very well off of iTunes or, you know, what are all the other different delivery mechanisms for the digital comics. They'll check out an issue for 99 cents or $1.99 or whatever they are if they think that they're getting a good story and there's a good... Now that we do have the color iPads and the other devices that make it a similar experience, and then even an enhanced experience as they move into more motion comics and some of these other kinds of ways of delivering the entertainment content.
I got to be honest, I'm not a big fan of the motion comics. I mean, they're fine for what they are. Don't call them comics. I mean, it's flash animation.
Does anybody like motion comics? Does anybody here like motion comics?
I don't dislike them. I just don't like them.
No one has raised their hand because I don't know who they're for.
It's a toy.
For us.
Well, it's a toy and it takes too long to produce.
They've done them right. You know,
what's missing?
Well, I think it's more than just doing 60s Marvel animation. You're right. These things, right?
Yep.
It's if you do something original that's meant to be like that. But then, I guess if you look at it that way, it's you turn into a cartoon or something, right? But you remember those old Marvel cartoons?
Yeah, grew up with them, actually.
You know, see them on videotape or DVD or whatever. But, I mean, it's just moving stuff around and just taking, you know, one of Bendis's Spider-Women comics that is a print comic and making things move around a little bit. You don't get the full experience from it.
What do you think, Jimmy?
What are we talking about?
You're not paying attention? Cammy, what do you think? Right. We'll go back to Jimmy.
Digital comic. No, I think it's obviously the future. But again,
it's the present.
No, yeah, exactly. You're right. Absolutely, present and future. It's not going anywhere. It's only going to develop even further. Again, like they mentioned earlier, I prefer holding something in my hand and reading. But if they come up with really good formats to sort of read them online, which they're getting better and better, then yeah, I'm all for it.
And also, another thing to consider is like the price as well, because a lot of people still are saying, well, if it's all digital, if it's just, you know, we can get mass quantities of it and it's never going to run out, why is it still $2.99 or why is it $1.99?
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What do we all... all right, $1.99, fair price. Cammy says no. Jimmy, fair price, $1.99?
Yes.
Bob? I think they should be more like 99 cents. I think $1.99 for something that you don't have a physical copy of and that it's not something you can hand to somebody else. And there's sharing mechanisms. I've seen that, well, you can give it to someone for 2 weeks or whatever, but it's not the same.
I agree.
Pat?
Yeah, 99
cents. One of the things that people don't realize is that people act like digital comics, these files already exist. They just have to throw them. There's labor behind it. If you use Iverse or Comixology or Graphically or anything, you'll notice that they're all cut up and they're, you know, like to go through the panel by panel view, which I can't stand personally. I don't want to do that. But there's labor involved in that. There's time. There's a graphics guy who has to go in and do all of those things. And they have to optimize all those files for digital as opposed to print. They're different things. And people don't realize that. They think that, just throw them up. They're already done. You know, and so much of of the cost of comics, at least in terms of the corporate comics, it comes from paying talent, and the support staff, the editors, all that stuff. And the printing is an issue. The printing has something to do with why the cost has gone up, but I don't think it's all of it. I think that everything's gotten more expensive. I'm guessing a lot of the writers and artists that are big names are coming at a premium now, and that's one of the things driving costs too, because they can make a ton of money. You know, DC and Marvel have to do this pony show where they're like, we're going to have him exclusive. We have to pay him. They do it with money. You know, that's how it happens.
Okay, well, what about for new comics then? Like, have new comics at maybe a set price of, like, still $2.99, $3.99, what have you. But for the older issues that you cannot get anymore or it's really hard to get, would you be all for maybe a cheaper price for those, like maybe 99 cents, 50 cents?
Would I like that? Yes. Do I understand why they're not? I mean, the thing is, you know, is it new to you? You know, like to them, it's a thing they own. It's a problem, and I don't want to be like I'm not for this. I'm sort of playing devil's advocate. I understand where they are. You know, they'll probably get cheaper as you go forward. But right now, they have the massive cost of making those all into something that works. Somebody's got to go through and scan and probably recolor like a lot of stuff from the '60s or something like that. There's a cost in there. There's labor.
You know, let's take a question from the audience. Go ahead, sir.
Our first question was about digital comics, and the man pointed out that there were already lots of popular comics by the major two companies that were already available by pirate copies. So didn't the template for creating these digital copies already exist?
I don't understand why somebody would ever get a comic book and then scan the entire thing for hours. I have to scan stuff for our show, and I hate it. It's the worst thing on earth. And if somebody wants to go in, I don't know why they do that. That's like, it's almost like it's an aberration of sorts that those people want to do it. But it's not like Marvel can go to the pirates and be like, hey, can we have your files? Because you already did it. You know?
And some of these pirate copies, like The Walking Dead, I saw the CBZ for that. And that was very painstakingly done and very effectively progression of panel by panel to really, I think, enhance. Pardon? Yeah, exactly. Give me a break. Give me a break. Cammy, I would agree with you too when it comes to Silver Age stuff. If you're paying $1.99 for what was a 12 cent comic that has been reprinted upteen times, I don't think so, and I'd use worse language.
Well, you pay less if you bought a color trade of like a collection of stories like the Kree Skrull War, you're paying the same amount for that trade as you are for a current trade, so what's the difference?
I would say, again, it's the trade is one thing, but I would say some of these 12-cent comics back in the day with 11-page
stories. 12 cents is a relative price. This isn't 1968.
You're right, but it's also been reprinted a million times as well. It's the same argument that I had when MP3s came out, and it's like, all right, I've bought this song as a 45, as a cassette, as an 8-track, as an album, and as a CD. I didn't really feel bad downloading from Napster that song that I've already committed to through the company for 20-plus years.
I think it's a matter of, like, if the companies were trying to appeal to us, they would do those things, but they're not.
Well, and also, I don't think that 64 issue of Spider-Man is worth $1.99 compared to
today's comic. I have that omnibus. I haven't read any of it.
Right.
it's really boring.
But, Josh, I mean, and I can appreciate that. I just think that having the higher price, if you want to take digital comics and use them as a way to get to a new audience, it's a barrier to entry in that how long does it take to read a standard 22-page comic versus how much somebody pays for a video game, how much they pay to rent a movie, you know, on the Netflix, and how much entertainment value do you get? You know, you're getting 15 minutes for $2. I just think that the 15
if
minutes...
If your time in the bathroom lasts 15 minutes, yeah.
...has a certain value, and I don't care how much they have to pay some intern to scan that thing in and do some stuff to it. You know, it should be 99 cents. Now, if it's new material targeted at digital, that's different. But if it's something that they've already had the creation cost on and they've already absorbed the, you know, the writer and the artist and the editor and all that kind of stuff.
I think it'd be really interesting to see what happens because right now, obviously, we're in the beginning part where they're all trying to
figure out
how much. I mean, look, what do they want to do? They want to sell them for as much money as possible, and it's all going to drop in some way. I think that's going to happen. But, you know, it's funny because you think about it, like for years when you would go into CD stores, like all the Beatles CDs were always the most expensive ones. And it's like they've existed forever. And so they're trying to get that maximum value out of them, I guess. I would imagine that after time, they have to drop. Like, they have to at some point.
And they're still experimenting. I mean, there's the Iron Man annual that they're splitting into two pieces.
Ridiculous.
And they're selling two digital files.
I thought three.
Costing you
three.
More. Three. It'll cost you more to buy the digital.
It's $2 more.
I agree. I mean, I agree entirely.
When are we going to have more companies do more day and date comics, digital and.
I mean, it's the same thing as, yeah, it's the same problem music had 10 years ago with Napster and iTunes and stuff like that. And it's so funny because they're like, oh, we learned the lessons of the music industry. Right now, they seem to be making the same wrong decisions. And it depends on what area of the company you're talking to. I think there are, even within the corporation, I think there are offices that are very much for day and day, and there are other offices that are like...
It's protectionism of the current profit.
We have to, exactly. We have to,
I mean, all, you know. But at the same time, day and date, though, who's that important to? That's important to the...
Already
100,000 people, which
right.
is nothing, which is peanuts. We are a marketing division for the most part. And
right.
so, like, they could do it, but realistically, that's not going to make them that much more money. Like, if you think about it in the overall sense, I don't think. I would love it. Don't get me wrong. I mean, like, I as a reviewer, like, we get PDFs, you know, from companies when they come out. I love reading comics like that. I don't need to read another issue in my life ever again, but not everybody else gets to do that. But I could, obviously, the appeal is there. Like, I want that.
James, you haven't spoken. Any thoughts? Or want to move on to another topic?
Sorry, there's this huge line out there that I couldn't get through.
No, I'm saying, honestly, no, believe me, I know, we got caught in that same traffic. No, but any other thoughts, or should we move on to a new topic?
Go on. I'll jump in. I promise.
Okay, no worries. Should we move on? How about movies and television?
I was going to say, what was your you had a different idea about what?
I have a different
thing
for the last 5 years. Something I find significant is the resurgence of non-Marvel DC Image companies. You know, you have Boom, you have Radical, you have Dynamite, IDW. A lot of these are very viable concerns, and they're doing different things with comics. You know, there's different properties that can be brought to the comic form that wouldn't work at Marvel and DC. A good example, I was talking to Jimmy Palmiotti, his Time Bomb property that's coming out from Radical. You know, he shopped that around to Marvel and DC and several other publishers. They weren't interested because it doesn't fit their mold.
Right.
It's a really cool story. But, you know, Radical's there, and Radical can publish that for
sure.
I mean, I think that some of the things that, you know, Dynamite does with some of the, you know, public domain properties and what Boom is doing with their various things and their kids line.
Archaea.
And Ape and Archaea. And, you know, all these companies, they seem to, in the last 5 years, have gotten a little more relevant, even though the sales numbers are not necessarily there. They're putting out very valuable...
But we're measuring that by comic book stores,
right.
as opposed to, like, in the case of Boom, which has
right.
a license of things like the Muppet Books and Cars, and I'm sure their bookstore numbers are very competitive. And that is an area that I think it's harder to hunt for those numbers, but they're very significant numbers, and I think every company is very interested in what's happening, obviously, in the bookstores.
And that's a whole separate thing, is when you go with the different, you know, trades versus monthlies and stuff. But I just like the fact that we now have so many more genres that are out there than just superheroes. And they're out there if you want to look for them. Not every store carries them. You know, you can go into a lot of stores and they've got the top 20 or 30 selling Marvel and DC comics and maybe a smattering of Dark Horse and Image and, you know, whatever. But it's hard to find some of these other really cool comics that are out there.
Well, the sad thing is if we post about something on our site that's about the Avengers, people really respond. But if we post about a Boom book or something like that, nobody cares.
Yeah.
And it's sad. It's awful. Like, I can sit there all day and just be like, this book is amazing. It's so good. And nobody cares. And it's just, it's heartbreaking.
You have a full-fledged community on your boards and on your website. And it's, you know, really the website came before the podcast. My podcast pretty much is the way I communicate with my audience. I have a message board, and I'm happy to engage in conversation. But mostly it's just kind of, hey, how you doing? And really stuff not involving comics or the podcast. It's really more other interests and stuff like that. You guys have a very active community. Mm-hmm. What about the rest of you as far as what you guys do in terms of communicating via the podcast through emails that you might read on air or the message board and stuff? What kind of engagement with the audience do you have?
We have a forum on the comicbookpage.com website.
But I mean, is it like, well, I guess as opposed to just, yes, I have a message board,
it's a forum and there's threads, you know, we talk about topics, you know, what do you think about this book? We have certain threads that are, you know, like, what kind of stuff are you looking forward to this month? If you see some news item that comes out,
well, sure,
Newsarama or CBR, you put something up there and there's a discussion about it. So
do you find
there's a dialogue going on with a segment of the listenership, although, and it's always great to have more people participate, but, you know, there's a lot of people that just like to listen to the show. They don't,
is it a significant portion of your audience?
It's probably not.
Okay.
Probably not.
Yeah, I was just curious.
You know, it's like that 10% to 20%
Okay. Problem. What about you, Jim?
Yeah, pretty similar, I'd say, because forums come and go. There's times when our forums are just, you know, on fire. There's times when it's kind of desolate. And same with emails. We get a ton sometimes, and sometimes we don't, won't. We certainly love it when we get it.
Sure.
And it's great to hear from people, whether they agree or disagree with us. It's always awesome to kind of go back and forth, and we try to reply to everybody. You know, we usually do reply to everybody that does. And I think it's an important part when it happens. If it doesn't happen, it's okay. Because there are, like you said, there are people that just enjoy listening, and they might have an opinion on the topic, but they don't care to write in, they don't care to call in, and that's okay.
I come from radio, so frankly, I like the idea of new media, that the audience is engaged and active in participating in the program, but I really am kind of used to, here's especially for my show, which is an interview show, here's the interview. Thrilled that you guys have comments on it and and guest suggestions and that. But yeah, I really am kind of used to the one-way thing of 25 years in radio, so.
But you also use a lot of listener questions when you have guests on, you don't?
Yeah, so for only for certain, like, you know, really people like Gail Simone and Bendis, that's what they really want. They're like, oh, can we do a Q&A like that? And every now and then I'll throw things up. But honestly, I am kind of like, well, I kind of have a list of questions that I want to hit and stuff. And it depends. But mostly it's that rather than the other. So, Cammie, how about you?
Well, like Jimmy was saying, like, if it's usually a lot of, like, just no conversation on the forums, which are hosted at the comics forums, Comic Speak guys. But the downloads and the views, like, speak for themselves. Obviously, there are people out there who have some interest in it, and the only time I'll ever get emails asking certain questions or whatnot is if someone disagrees with the review, or they have a question like, hey, when you're going to Comic-Con, yeah. So usually when there's, like, no discussion whatsoever, it's usually they're just like, okay, yeah, I agree, or I disagree.
In the audience, I'm curious, how many of you have podcasts yourselves? Show of hands. All right. No, that's cool.
They're gonna
that's cool.
Out the dais next
that's all right.
So did you just not want us to talk about random stuff? Or
no, you know, and really, if anybody has questions, obviously you can line up and we'll go to questions at some point.
I got a question.
I just wanted to know about headphones. What the hell?
In the last 5 years, what book or creator did you become aware of from your show or from any of the shows on the...
Jason Aaron.
Okay.
I mean, not from my show, but really from The Other Side, the book coming out, and me, and Jason and Hickman, I would say, Jonathan Hickman and Jason Aaron, in the last specifically 5 years, because Fraction was slightly before I started that I became aware of him, but I'd say those three guys in particular are like the most interesting writers that I've encountered in the last 5 years. How about everybody else?
Well, I was always most of us, pretty avid collector, but I was pretty kind of heavy with, you know, with a lot of superhero stuff and occasionally random things here from Dark Horse or whatever. Doing this show has, for the past 5 years, has really expanded me, and like I've opened up to the world of independent comics, and I champion those as much as I can. I love going to shows like SPX or, you know, Mocha. I tend to spend way more at those shows. I won't buy one comic book here because you can get it at a comic book store, most of them, unless you find a smaller press one. But at the really small press shows, you find fantastic autobiographical or just, you know, random story, even a superhero story at a Mocha show, you know, and it's great. It's open. I mean, not just these big names are great. I heard of got through, probably would have found Hickman initially in the Nightly News if it wasn't for the show. But because we do the show, we want to cover so much. We want to, you know, there's so many different types that listen to the show that we want, you know, and each week I'll pick reviews and we'll have like maybe all superhero books, and next week it may be all independent books. You know, there's no rhyme or reason, but we appeal. And we've gotten emails like, oh, we hate indie stuff. Oh, we hate superhero stuff. That's fine. But it's really opened my eyes to so many great creators, not just in print, but in webcomics. You know, like Katie Beaton. My God. She's a rock star. She's amazing. But a lot of people don't know who she is. HarkaVagrant.com. Check her out. She's amazing. And she works. You know, people like that. So I probably never would have ran across them. Plus, for sure.
We should go down the road, and yeah, that's a pants. That's very good. Who in the last 5 years has inspired everyone, Cammy?
When I first got started with the whole reviewing, Umbrella Academy really stood out to me.
Awesome.
And so one artist in particular, Gabriel Bá. Like,
sure.
I was like, oh, this guy's awesome. And then I was like, wait, he has a twin? And then you start doing research on it, you see Pixu 5, you see like 1947 come out, and then with Day Tripper more recently.
Oh yeah.
Emotional punch to the gut, like every issue. So just to be able to like put together the dots and like discover from different comic books and different graphic novels and whatnot, certain artists or like, for me it's mainly artists. I really love finding like a new style. It like makes my week. like, you know, writers are great too. Like, you know, they're obviously usually the opening act on the front cover there, but you find a lot of great artists like the Gabriel Labov, Bobby. I mean,
sure.
Yeah.
Bob?
You know, we do an indie book, kind of differing definitions of indie, what I consider indie and what indie Spinner Rack and maybe someone else. I'm not looking at the Mocha stuff, but, you know, kind of those mid-tier publishers. And there's been a lot of books since we're trying to go through those each week, and we're trying not to do repeats that we find just because of the show. One of the ones that really stands out for me is Richard Starkings and the crew that he has on Elephant Men. And in particular, you know, if you look at an artist, is Justin Norman Moritat, who is now moved up and he's doing the Spirit at DC. That guy is a fabulous artist. And I first noticed him on Elephant Men. But that's a great book. And there's just more than I can even think of that I've found. Just the other day, I read the first issue of Sweets by Cody Chamberlain. Came out from
outstanding book.
He's down at the Image booth now. You know, go and check that out. That was a fabulous book.
Answer your own question.
Yeah, for me, I know he's been around for a long time before the show, but Terry Moore.
Sure.
When we started doing the pocketbook series book by book with Terry Moore, I went out and bought all the issues before we got to the end, and I'm reading Echo, and it's something that I'm just kicking myself for not reading it from the beginning. I was focused on just the superheroes and just opened my eyes to the show. Terry Moore is just wonderful talent.
That's cool. Josh.
I'm trying to think. Because I use my excuses. I use my show as an excuse to talk to people who I'm really interested in their work anyway.
Exactly.
So, I mean, that's what I do. Like, I'm a writer also. So, like, can I talk to you for an hour about writing? That's awesome. That's what I used to do.
Yep.
I would say if there's anything on the show, I'll tell you one. Dave Stewart, colorist, was listening to our show, and he wrote to me, and he's like, "I like the show," and I was like, "You're Dave Stewart. What are you listening to me for? It's crazy." And he noticed that we never talked about Hellboy, and he was like, "Let me send you Hellboy." He sent me everything he'd ever done on Hellboy, and I read through it. And now, you know, because of that, so then, like, I became a giant Mignola fan,
cool,
and Arcudi fan, and Duncan Figueredo, and oh my, Guy Davis. Guy Davis is the most elegant storyteller working today. There's no doubt in my mind. Like, and that stuff that you don't see, if you don't read those books, you don't know about it, you know, because they don't do anything.
Well, you see, that's funny, because with Guy Davis, for me, it was Sam M. Mystery Theater. Mm-hmm. So well before I was doing podcasting, so I understand.
Yeah. I wasn't reading then.
I understand. No, and it's interesting, because really, like, much like Josh, I'm a writer guy as well, and that's why immediately my mind goes to the writers, and there are wonderful artists already mentioned here and stuff. Certainly the brothers, you know, Fabio and Gabriel are incredible. Moritat's awesome as well. All the guys that Richard gets for Elephant Men and stuff. But yeah, it is interesting, and I think you can tell by listening really what our opinions are and what we like and everything, because, yeah, I'll admit it, my show is incredibly self-indulgent. I mean, it has to be something that interests me. I feel like a jerk because there are people that I've been introduced to. In fact, the iFanboy guys introduced me to Scott Lobdell last year at WonderCon.
That was awkward.
And that was during my blind spot, exactly. And I'm like, and you are, and that, and what did you do? And these X-Men fans are, oh my God, he Generation X, the Age of Apocalypse, the whole shot, Danger
Future. Or they had an opposite reaction.
Yeah.
So possible.
Well, you know. But yeah, I really felt like a jerk. And that's the thing. I you know, sometimes publishers will come to me. I don't know if you guys feel like it sometimes, where it's like, hey, talk to my creator. And it's like, you know, I got to be honest, I'm really not into the book, so how about no? You know, it's, you know, seriously. And it's like, it's, I'm not a, you know, I don't think I'm anything more than another fan, truly. And it's just that it's, like I said, the podcast is self-indulgent. It has to be to want to put it out every week, as I'm sure everyone would agree.
You need a co-host.
No, I don't. You know, honestly, Pants, very quickly, I don't want a co-host, because that's how I get to do the Bendis tapes, because it's 2 o'clock in the morning, my time, and I know Brian is hanging out, and yeah, we can talk now. And it's like, okay, great. So we do. So, no, it's much easier for me to produce. In fact, before I was going to do Word Balloon as a podcast, I was going to make a documentary, and my video guy kind of flaked out on me. So I kind of went with do it yourself.
Well, you don't want partners.
So, yes, exactly. So he can attest 10 years later. So
I think, you know, that's right, because when I do interviews, you know, we try to do interviews when books are out in previews, and they're not as elaborate as the ones you do, but I do try to find people that, you know, that I'm interested in talking to. But on our regular weekly show, it's kind of interesting because we pick the books blind a couple of weeks before. We haven't read them. You know, we pick a Marvel, a DC, and another one. And I think that's the thing, is sometimes we'll read a book and it's like, it wasn't that good of a book. You know, we'll try to give constructive you know, not just, it's not just, well, that was bad. It was like, well, this is, it didn't work for me. The coloring was too dark. It obscured what was going on, whatever. So we are not just covering things that we're a fan of, because a lot of times, and this, another one that's really interesting is when sometimes we'll pick a week of stuff that explicitly is not on our pull list. You know, just here's three books that neither of us are reading normally, and we'll go out and get those, and we'll read them blind. Sometimes it doesn't work out so well, but another time we did it, I found the Tales of the Dragon Guard, which is a European comic. Beautiful book, and, you know, it's a, you have to, like, kind of a fantasy type of thing. It's kind of that sword and sandal kind of thing, but I would have never found this book from Marvel Soleil imprint otherwise. So okay. It's kind of fun. You know, you do these kind of things, and you expand your own awareness of what's going on out there.
Nobody? Anybody? We can move on. All right. I've got a question. Is there something you guys wish you could do better on your podcast? I will say that I wish I had a better, and I keep trying to have more artists on and have a better understanding and way of talking to artists, because I am a writer's guy first and foremost. So a lot of times I am literally gun shy, and sometimes like embarrassed that when I do meet someone and they're like a really great artist, and it's, oh, I've been listening for years, and I'm like, oh shit, I should probably have you on the show. I'm sorry I haven't already. And, you know, and then eventually I do kind of sweating, go through an artist thing. And it turns out fine, and I know I can at least have a decent conversation. But I wish I was more, a little sharper art-wise, and would do art, you know, art interviews better. Are there things about your guys' show? Jim, let's start with you in terms of, is there any part of your show you'd like to be able to do better?
I don't know. I'm kind of brilliant on interviews, so
perhaps humility might be the suggestion.
Exactly. Yeah, no, I probably could talk a little less. I tend to talk a lot on the show. The show runs a little late, mostly because of me. I just get excited about something. I'll just go off on it. And we don't believe in editing much. We really don't. We don't edit anything out. The rare few times we have is when, like, a creator said, oops, that's a spoiler. Can you? Okay, we'll take it out.
But you're the traveler, though, on the show. Yeah, anyway, like, Joe's the homebody, yeah, it seems. Yeah. So, yeah, you're
well,
the
someone's
got to
stay home and make my dinner when I get home. spoiler alert. I'm just kidding. No, but yeah, I do. I go to all the shows, and I enjoy it. I really love it. It's like I get to see my friends. I get to see, you know, hang out, and it's fun. But I love interviewing people. I love chatting. I'm a, you know, former actor. And so I used to, you know, it's fun engaging and doing sort of that. It's like, you know, doing theater, you know. Again, it's like I'm just chatting and hanging out with people I admire and meeting new people that, you know, have new work that I really want to discover. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's definitely some things. I think it's just time. We get a little chatty. If we need to learn to cut it back a little. So
I'm still experimenting with audio. So for video, it's mainly more kind of technical things, whether it be just work on lighting a little bit more or work on just different backdrops. Like I'm trying to play around a little with the green screen just to make maybe more images on the screen at the same time and whatnot. But also... Now I'm drawing a blank right now, but there are just more research. For instance, sometimes
every 10 minutes.
Well, yeah, whenever I'm talking
4 hours in the day, they'd be able to do that.
Yeah, and it can sometimes it can get really awkward and embarrassing when the creator starts listing off all their works that you forgot to mention. Like, oh, how did I forget that one?
You have to learn to be. You have to learn to be okay with not knowing everything. Because, like, it's funny because I can listen to anybody doing a podcast or anybody here, and somebody's going to know more about something than I do. And I found that the best thing to do is to be okay with not knowing it. When I talk to people before him, and I talk to, I'm not meaning to give you advice, but I mean, like, one of the things that made me really more comfortable was just the beginning, just to talk to creators and go, so here's what I know. Let me know if I'm wrong or if I missed anything. And then if you get something wrong, you're fine. You can't know everything. And don't, you know, like, you'll have fans out there. You'll have people to listen who will come back to you like, how did you not know that? Because I'm not a robot.
Oh, I have X fans that hate me because, yeah, it's like,
those people are lunatics, though.
Huh?
Those people are lunatics,
well,
though. They know everything.
You're right. Well, building on that, too, the other thing I'd say is listen, because that's what I learned in radio, and it took a long time doing it wrong before you learned that it's fine to talk to somebody, and it's like, yes, I'm well-known for my writing. I also build chips. And it's like, oh, well, let's talk about it, because as these creators say in these panels, everything they do influences their art or their creativity. So I do think that's important to get out in the interview as well. And that's why I am very happy to talk to people like Neil Adams, who has his interesting ideas on how the, you know, planets
you only
form.
Have to ask two questions, too, and you get like an hour.
But that's fine. And it, I again, again, I think it provides the full picture. And that's what I want to do with my show because, you know, previews, you got this much space. And sometimes if it's something on a publisher's website, they get this much space. That's another thing that drives me crazy very quickly about websites. I thought the internet was supposed to be infinite, and everyone is obsessed with short form.
No one reads it.
And, well, that's...
No, we put up long, long things and no one reads
it. Well, you know something?
Like, some people read half of it, but they ignore, like, did you read the thing? I read the first line. Well,
And you're right about that. It drives me nuts because I just think you've got the canvas.
I sound like a dick.
Yeah,
I think I just want to real quick, what you said, John, I think it's very important what you said about listening during an interview because you do, some things will slip by if you're not kind of paying attention because a lot of times you have your questions down, your listener questions, you're going along, just getting through the beat, you might be on a time limit, and somebody will say something just like, what? Wait a minute. Like,
I killed three men.
In issue 16, I was interviewing Chip Kidd today, and we were talking. All of a sudden, he goes, well, I should probably mention my book I'm writing about the Preps Guide to. I'm like, what? He's like, he's a full-on preppy, and he's been one for years, and he's writing a book about it. And it's, I was like, well, I have to ask you about that now.
Sure.
And it was great.
Exactly. It's discovery, and that's the thing about interviews is allow yourself to discover things and learn from them, and don't come with your agenda.
Right.
The kind of flip side to that is, though, I don't really have a list of questions written down, and I just kind of, when I'm talking to people, I just fly by the seat of my pants and just, like, try to make it more conversational. And a lot of times, I won't say a lot, but sometimes I will be setting up an interview and they ask me, well, what are the questions you're going to be asking?
I
have no idea.
I do that, and I do work from an outline, and I'm like, hey, man, I don't know.
No one's ever asked me that. No,
really?
No one's ever asked me that.
Oh, and more so publishers and publicists. And yeah, they were, or assistants to creators and publishers. Yes, they were wondering, can we get a list of your questions? And it's like, no, I'm not here to take a test. Yeah. It's a conversation. It'll come up. I'm like, I can tell you we're going to talk about these three books. But sure, things...
Yeah, you
absolutely.
Talk about something.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And that, you know, Jimmy, I heard you at, I want to say Heroes... It was either the Heroes Con panel or it was the... Bristol panel, but you were talking about like journalism and journalistic qualities or traits that you're trying to do. And where do you think the line? I mean, are we? I hate the word comic journalism because I think it's BS. Frankly,
right.
I think we follow a press release about a book or we hear about a book in previews and then we talk about it and stuff. Very little journalism, I think, is happening across the board. I do think there's some. I definitely think there's some. I don't think there's a lot, though. So I don't know. Do you guys consider yourselves journalists?
Not at all.
Oh, not at all.
We talked about this at Bristol. It was the main topic of the Bristol meeting. And we should be talking about this, but is new media journalism? It's starting to be, it's embraced as that by a lot of mainstream, but I have never considered myself a journalist.
Let me annex that with something even more. Do you consider yourselves critics or pundits? As opposed to just journalists.
There you go. I threw the curveball. I certainly consider us critics, we try to do it in as good a way as possible, but since our main weekly show is reviewing three books and we kind of give an opinion of what that book is, we're certainly giving a critique of three books a week, so yes.
I think my point, what you were talking about from that, I'm sorry, but my point, what you were saying is that while we're not really journalists, I think... You know, over the years, we've all kind of been doing this for a while. I think there's certainly things we've learned about some sort of journalistic ethics.
Yeah, responsibility.
You know, responsibility we have as a show. And some people don't think they have those. That's fine. I think it's fine. It's okay. To an extent. But creators and anyone you interview become a little more savvy to that, I think. And they appreciate when you're researched, when you follow a certain guideline or whatever. So that's kind of what I was talking about. But again, I'm certainly no journalist.
No, that's why I brought it up. And I wanted you to comment on that and everything. And yeah, I would say like the best and worst thing about a podcast is anyone can do it. And I would say then to every podcaster, you have a responsibility depending on what kind of show you want to do. If you want a show where you do just want to just crap on things or be very hypercritical, don't be surprised if, you know, Creator X doesn't want to come on your show because of the way that you've treated them in your critiques.
Well, that's the thing, John, and I think it's important if you don't enjoy something, give a reason. Don't just say it's bad. And we try very hard. It's like, it's not, this is bad. It's not, it wasn't, I didn't care for it. And here's why. Here's what didn't work for me. But it's not that it was bad, because something I don't like, somebody else is going to think it's the greatest thing in the world.
Okay. Let's go to questions, please.
So this question's kind of twofold, but it's only one question. I'm a communication major, and I'm here on a field study.
And so I'm both trying to kill two birds with one stone. I'm also, I've just started three new blogs, and I'm doing a video blog for the entire convention and my trip and all that. So my question is for you guys, is like, you're all successful. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. I mean, Revision 3 just had its fifth year anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean.
Is that correct? Yes.
Nice. Five. So my question is when, like, how, I know you can link to your own sites and you get friends through that, and then, you know, but how do you really
build an audience?
Yeah, build a real strong audience and it's, and keep that audience devout. Not in the sense of, like, they only come to you and you're the only podcast they watch, but in the sense that, like,
they keep coming back.
Yeah, they can keep coming back and they enjoy more so listening to you than they would just, you know, not listening to anyone.
Building audience, gentlemen. You want to start?
Well, for us, I know with our forums, we get all listeners tell us what they want to hear on the show. They, interview this person. We get so many of our ideas from them. I mean, we have our own ideas, of course, but what they want to hear, we'll try and provide for them.
But early on, too, before creating your community, what I did, especially initially, and I don't know if you guys also did this, I went to creator sites and said, hey, you like Colleen Doran? Well, hi, Colleen Doran fans. I did this interview with her. Here's a link. And that allowed people to come and hear it. And then when they came to Colleen's thing, I started my site with 5 interviews already up. So there was already a selection and stuff. And I went to their websites and said, hey, if you like this person, come to my thing. So then there was already a selection and stuff. I got to be honest, though, I started in 05 as well. And it, you know, at that time, as the old time radio guy, George Burns, used to say, we were all in the top 10 because there was only 8 of us. There are hundreds. There are more comic book podcasts than film critique podcasts. Crazy. And I can probably guess that the blog situation is similar. So it's, you know, yeah, I mean, I think it's hard, but I'll let anyone else answer that question as well.
The only lesson that I know from it is to do real good.
Yes.
I mean, like, do what you, be really honest. You have to be entertaining. You have to be, some, like, people, like, for us, like, you want to be somebody that, like, they want to talk comics with, you want to hang out with, you want to be consistent, you want to keep doing it, you want to, you do it regularly, do it at the same time all the time, and just keep at it because you want to do it. And then, even then, there's no guarantee about what's going to happen. Right now, everybody here has a show, and I mean, just keep doing it and really love doing it and have fun with it. And that honesty, that stuff, that comes through, and it takes forever. Like, you want to build an audience, it takes forever unless you're already a celebrity. That's the only other thing that guarantees you an audience. Other than that, it's just this uphill slog, and you know, be good.
Miss?
John, you mentioned earlier that you were going to do documentary and then your video guy failed, so you started doing this instead. I was wondering, for the rest of the panelists, what started you doing podcasts?
Can we go down the list quickly?
Yeah.
I saw the iFanboys' first video of Comic-Con, and that just blew me away. I knew that there was all these different audio podcasts out there. There was like thousands. Everyone and their pet goldfish had one. But I did never knew that you could do a video version, and that just blew my mind because I was already doing little videos for this other message board that I was on. I was like, well, I like comics. I can go ahead and do that too. Like, why not? And that's what really inspired me and got me, into it.
And he's good looking, so it helps.
Yeah, that's why I don't.
I know Brian's origin. If you don't know the origin of Comic Geek Speak,
no, I do know the origin of it. Yes, but
you came late to the game.
I came late. I just fell into it. Literally, my coworker, Shane, was.
Tell Brian, and what's his face?
Brian was just reading an article in Wired magazine about podcasting. He's a big tech guy. He wanted to do a podcast. What I know a lot about, comic books. Can my friends talk about comic books? I just went from there. And
then how'd you hook up on the show?
Shane was one on the show. He's a coworker, who was a worker of mine at Toys R Us.
Cool.
And we just got to talking about it, and I eventually just got on the show, and now you can't get rid of me.
We had the website, because it was a thing. We had an email list where a bunch of us were talking about comics, and we thought, we'll start a website, and then nobody came to it, and we did that for years. And then Ron said, let's do a podcast. I'm like, okay. And then we got on Skype, because we'd been using that for World of Warcraft for the year before that. And then that weaned us off of that addiction. And so we just started doing this, and then people were listening. And we were like, that's neat.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm curious what your guys' thoughts are on paid sponsorship or possibly even paid
for
reviews. It occurs to me that, like, a lot of your guys' shows, I think, or I should say I suspect, have a larger listening audience numbers than a lot of the books that are being published out there, except for maybe the most successful ones from the big two. So it seems to me that like some of these publishers would be very interested in something like that, you know, working with
sponsorships directly from publishers?
Yeah, something like that. Like,
ooh,
what
there's
you guys
an interesting have. Journalistic line.
Yeah, yeah. The same lines
no, I understand.
Thing. Yeah. Not necessarily slanting it negative or positive, but I'm just curious to it.
And frankly, from a self-publishing standpoint, I actually just wrapped up a campaign asking if self-publishers specifically that were coming to the con if they wanted to promote, and I did a program like that. So I think it's on a case-by-case basis, but I think some of the bigger players, I'd be a little leery of that.
I mean, Dynamic has been our sponsor for a few years now, and like they have Dynamite Publishing. But we said in our contract, we said if we review a Dynamite book, it doesn't mean we're going to love it.
Good.
You know, so
good.
They're like, fair enough. So
we explicitly don't do advertising or sponsorships. We've been asked, and we just see. John and I both have day jobs. We both get a decent salary, so we don't need to get a couple hundred dollars to keep things going. Which I have no problem with people who do, and it's just since we mostly do comic reviews, I don't want to be in a position where I feel that we're even subconsciously skewing our view of something and our review of something because we're getting a sponsorship from someone.
It's never come up. We didn't go after them. Like, we were like, well, let's not go after publishers, but nobody's come after us to do that. We've had other kinds, and that's fine. It's not like a natural fit, I don't think. And that way I don't have to worry about it. It's funny because we still have to worry about stuff like that. We have relationships with publishers and create. I'm friends with creators, things like that. You're always thinking about us. There's always these things, but we just try to be honest. We just try to talk about stuff we like. I think that helps, unless something's really egregious, and then we have a lot of fun with it for one episode.
All right, we got the five-minute rule, so we got to speed lightning through with the people that are still standing. So quick question. Go ahead.
Bob brought it up about criticism. Just like real quick from each of you, what is like your personal criteria for reviewing a comic book? Like, I guess
the criteria for a review?
Well, I mean, like, I'm trying to articulate it in my time limit, but just what does it for you? Like, why is Day Tripper amazing? Why is
I think that's an essay question, sir, frankly, and I think it's a book-by-book basis. Yeah. Gentlemen?
You can read my review on Day Tripper number 8, pick of the week, 2 weeks ago.
There you go.
We talk about when we do our show each week, pick of the week show, we pick the books. We basically send an email around like, I want to talk about this, this, and this, because you have something to say about it. It's you have something to say about it one way or another, and it made you feel something one way or another. And eventually, if you do it long enough, you'll feel relatively articulate about how to say those things and what it is you want to say.
There's so many different comic book podcasts out there. Is there a niche that hasn't been hit yet for someone who wants to start their own?
That's a fair question, and I would suggest that answer has to come from you guys.
With a little bit more of an adult slant.
More of an adult slant?
Yeah.
Something like, you mean like a dirty adult, or you mean more like for...
My name's the Comic Hip, by the way.
I know you.
It's more of mixing comic books in with adult entertainment.
I think your forum has already been set, sir. I've heard your phone calls at Comic Geek Speak. Thank you. You're notorious, sir. This is like a Baba Booey.
Yeah, I just figured I couldn't do any of my material because there's like kids and children to women.
Yeah, there are children here, so be
just,
careful.
Just review, I didn't want to scare them with doing a dirty Mickey right. Mouse.
Just review The Pro every week.
Okay. By Jimmy.
I can handle that.
All right. Yeah, I think you found your niche, sir. I think it's waiting for you. So
now, my other question, real quick, is to you, John.
To me.
Since I've been rejected from every because I'm sightless.
Okay.
Since I've been rejected from every broadcasting school in existence on the Tri-State area.
Oh, bummer.
What are my? Because I don't want to deal with a blind person for some reason. Because I'm like lazy and crap. How would I be able to handle like some of the technical stuff?
Oh, figure out the technical stuff?
No, I can always just kind of cast them and piggyback on Comic Geek Speak and then decide to bring me on.
Sure.
No, it's hard. You know, honestly, I don't know from a technical standpoint, given your specific case, what to do. There's got to be a forum somewhere to explain podcasting for disabled people like yourself. I'm not sure. But I think that's, you know, and honestly, I think podcasting is a great way to go, because if you aren't denied that forum in a broadcast sense, I would say that podcasting is a great way to kind of get your message out there and kind of do your thing. And like I said, I think you've already been successful kind of even breaking through with the geeks and stuff on your phone calls.
They're not getting rid of me anytime soon.
No. He's our bread and butter.
There you go. But no, you're a funny guy, man. Thanks for coming today. That's very funny.
See you in the bonus panel.
Excellent. Rocking. Thank you, dude. I love your hat. Thank you, my man. Please.
Hey, Pence, why don't the Forbes and the Matt up?
Are they down again?
Are they down again this weekend? My God.
So, that's my little question. actually, I'm representing the BatmanUniverse.net, and as doing such, what are some of your favorite niche podcasts to listen to in terms of dedicated to one particular character or even one particular company you like?
Our favorite niche comic book podcast?
Pardon?
Our favorite niche comic book podcast?
Yeah, like Lincoln Bots for DC or Spider-Man Fall Space for Spider-Man, stuff
sure.
like that.
I don't have a favorite specific niche podcast. I do like the general talk and everything, but guys, do you have a favorite niche?
I can't think of a niche one that I mean, I
like Raging Bullets.
I listen to
Noise.
Do you listen to a lot of other
podcasts? I listen to for a while called Being James Bond, where they would talk
I've heard
about
that. I've heard the Trek cast.
Bond kind of stuff.
Yeah, who does or doesn't listen to other podcasts? I do listen to some other podcasts.
I don't listen to other comics podcasts.
I don't. That's a lot, but I also like BBC Radio 1s.
Yeah.
KCRW. Yeah. I'm a big fan of that stuff.
I did for a while, but like it was just, it's my job. I talk about comics all the time, so I tend to not do it anymore.
I apologize. We're getting the wrap-up sign, so I do apologize. But I know we're all around.
Thanks, everyone, for coming.
Having
Thank
for
you
very
question.
Much.
We appreciate it. Thanks for listening.
And there you have it, this year's podcast panel from San Diego Comic-Con. I thought it was a great discussion and was very pleased and honored to moderate the panel. And look forward to seeing my more podcasting brethren at more of the conventions later this year. My thanks to all the co-hosts, and enjoy their podcasts and continue to patronize their shows as well as my show, Word Balloon. One more panel coming up of our San Diego coverage, Catherine and Stuart Immerman, and that'll be on the next episode of Word Balloon. This episode was brought to you by a great friend to all comic podcasters, InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide selection of your favorite trade paperbacks, hardcovers, special editions, essentials, absolute editions, omnibus editions, showcases, you name it, it's waiting for you at 35% or more off the standard retail price. And don't forget about their sister site discount comic book service, DCBService.com, for your monthly pre-order needs, where you can get savings of up to 40 to 75% off the standard retail price. For the details, check out their websites, InStockTrades at InStockTrades.com, discount comic book service at DCBService.com. John Sutris again saying thanks again for listening. Word Balloon is always happy to have you along for the ride. You can find us at WordBalloon.com on Tuesdays with a new episode at iFanboy. Of course, we're at iTunes. Questions or comments about the show, feel free to reach me via message board right here at WordBalloon.com and at JinxWorld.com. Through Facebook, under my name, John Sutris, you can follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon. Or if you have any questions or comments, feel free to send an email, john@wordballoon.com. Until next time, thanks again for listening. The San Diego coverage continues with one more show, Catherine and Stuart Immerman, a great spotlight panel. Hope you join us. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.